Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Joy Rees is the Vice President of Emerging Pharmacy Channels at McKesson. She is responsible for driving strategies, customer growth, and focus for a new segment focused on the emerging channel digital pharmacy space. Prior to joining McKesson, Dr. Rees served in various leadership roles with Walgreens, including Director of Pharmacy and Retail Operations, Regional Director of Local Specialty Operations, and District Pharmacy Supervisor. She was also the co-chair for the Women of WBA Southwest Region Chapter, which was recognized as Chapter of the Year in 2021. Dr. Rees holds a Doctor of Pharmacy degree from Midwestern University College of Pharmacy, a bachelor's degree from Canisius University, and is currently serving as the president of Midwestern University's Alumni Senate. Hello, Dr. Rees, and welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
I heard that you just got back from Buffalo, New York.
Yes, I did. We spent about 2.5 weeks there. My children and I always go back to my hometown where I was born and raised to spend time with my family and friends. Buffalo is absolutely gorgeous in the summer, and we went camping and spent some time on the beach on Lake Erie. We had a wonderful time. My son even got to go to the Buffalo Bills training camp. We're huge Buffalo Bills fans. He got to meet some of his idols like Stephon Diggs and Damar Hamlin and Von Miller, Gabe Davis. So for those who might be listening that are fellow Bills Mafia, go Bills. And it was definitely the highlight of our summer.
Wow. So I'm really glad to hear how you make it a priority to make sure that they have a connection to their roots. I did not know that you were an avid Buffalo Bills fan. So this is really interesting. And hopefully there's a couple of listeners out there that are cheering for you because they're also Bills fans. And no haters, guys. We don't want that on this show. But Joy, it's an exciting pleasure to have you on the show. I know many of my listeners are meeting you for the first time. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Sure. Thank you so much. Again, thank you so much for having me. We work together in a couple different ways, and I just really appreciate this opportunity. So for those of you that don't know me, my name is Joy Rees. I am a VP Emerging Pharmacy Channels at McKesson. In my role today, I'm working with digital and emerging healthcare companies who are really looking to disrupt the pharmacy space and really helping them navigate through McKesson, which is a huge company, as I'm sure you know. And really, our team was set up to really support these new pharmacies. You know, when you think of the customers that I'm working with today, it's very non-traditional pharmacy. Not Walgreens and CVS and Rite Aid. It's more these non-traditional pharmacies. And McKesson has a long history of working with traditional pharmacies, hospitals, doctor's offices, things like that. And so they're really trying to understand how to work with this sort of new segment of customers. And so I work with those companies today. Prior to that, though, I've been with McKesson for about 1.5 years. I was with Walgreens for about 19 years. in a variety of different leadership roles and very exciting career journey. I'm so grateful for my time at Walgreens. Director of Pharmacy and Retail Operations was my most recent role, but I had a lot of different roles in the company. Senior Director of Advanced Therapies, where I stood up an infusion team. Regional Director of Local Specialty Pharmacies, where I helped lead all of our specialty locations and work on getting URAC accreditation. But you know, I started as a pharmacist. That's my background. That's my training. And frankly, I actually started as a pharmacy technician before I even went to pharmacy school at Walgreens. So had some really awesome roles there, really amazing career journey. And that's kind of where it got me to today. You know, like I said, I'm from Buffalo, New York, went to college in Buffalo at Canisius College. That's where I got my bachelor's in biology, then moved out to Arizona and went to Midwestern University, Glendale, and very active in as an alumnus, which is where I got to meet you and yes. We worked together. I'm the president of the Midwestern University Alumni Senate. So that's super fun and exciting. Where we really, you know, are trying to create the sense and connection and pride with Midwestern, which is super exciting. But yeah, at the core of it all, I'm a busy working mom and I have two amazing kids, Aiden and Ava, and they keep me very busy. Aiden's playing football right now. We literally have football like 5 days a week. And Ava does gymnastics. They just went back to school last week. So we're getting back into our routine. But it's nice. I love my role right now. I work from home, which is a huge change from my life at Walgreens. So it's really allowed me to attend, be a lot more present in my children's activities and life. And I can drop them off and pick them up from school every day. So it's just really been amazing. And so yeah, so that's a little bit about me. And I guess just one piece I want to add, you know, I'm here, my answers today are my own answers and do not represent McKesson or my role at McKesson. So just wanted to add that little disclaimer in there.
Of course, not a problem at all. And, you know, there's a lot of our listeners today that are going to be very familiar with McKesson. They are pharmacists, they are healthcare executives that have either interacted with or maybe even do business with McKesson, right? But there's also a percentage that may not. So I always like to follow up and share a little bit more about your company. And I know that McKesson is a global leader in healthcare, specifically a global leader in healthcare supplies, retail pharmacy, and pharmaceutical distribution, that it was founded in 1833, and it is the fourth largest pharmacy chain in the United States with over 5,000 retail pharmacy locations at Health Mart. McKesson is also the nation's largest distributor of medications, responsible for a third of all pharmaceuticals used in North America. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe your company has about 51,000 employees. You guys made about $276 billion in total revenue. But aside from that, you know, McKesson is a very strong champion and supporter of several public initiatives, right? So we're talking about sustainability, disaster preparedness, opioid, fighting opioid abuse, and many others. So, you know, when I think about McKesson and I think about the company and the way that it leads in so many different areas, like it's an honor to have you on the show today, because, you know, part of the questions that we'll be asking you is really to understand some of the things that your company does, but also, you know, how it takes on some of these problems that are facing the country and the continent as well. And so, you know, I usually lead in at this point with just questions about like what your day-to-day, you know, activities have been, and maybe some successes that you would like to share with us in terms of what your role has been as a vice president of emerging channels. You've talked about a lot of these non-traditional organizations that are coming out, and they're starting to like kind of break the mold of how, you know, of pharmaceutical distribution. And that's, you know, even for those that are listening on the show today, they know that Blue Cross Blue Shield made an announcement just earlier this week about how they're kind of breaking some of their relationships with traditional providers and trying out these new things. So being at the forefront of that has got to be very cool, right? Like you're dealing with people and pharmacies and patients and providers and payers. That is like not the usual playbook that you just get to whip a page out of and apply. I'd love to hear a little bit more about like some of the challenges that you've seen in this role. Maybe some things that you've brought from your past into the present that's allowed you to be successful. And then maybe some successes that you've been able to say, hey, because of the work that my team and I have done, we're so proud of this because it's really changed the game.
Yeah, no, great questions. I think where I would start is, you know, day to day in my role, I'm working with predominantly startup companies or companies that are in this rapid growth phase. They have some kind of strong, really cool technology. A lot of the healthcare companies I work with, and I call them healthcare companies because they're not all pharmacies. I work with a lot of telehealth companies that are providing a service to patients and providing healthcare to patients. A lot of it developed through COVID, where, you know, patients didn't want to go into the doctor's office, go into the hospital. They wanted to just go on their phone, talk to a clinician, and be able to get the healthcare that they need when they want it, where they want it. And so we saw a lot of these digital companies pop up. And I think where McKesson's trying to understand is, you know, how do we work with these companies that may not have a pharmacy today? But a lot of the companies I work with, you know, are kind of like prospects to McKesson because they don't have a pharmacy today. So, you know, a lot of them are, like I said, telehealth companies, and they're providing a service, but now they're interested in, say, you know, instead of providing a service, you know, diagnosing a patient, writing a prescription for them, and then they have to send that prescription to the patient's retail pharmacy of choice, they'd like to follow that patient's journey and be able to fulfill that patient's prescription. So we're starting to see a lot of these digital companies inquire about opening up their own pharmacy. And this is where I would put one of the challenges that I deal with every day is a lot of these companies that I work with have some amazing technology and they're technology folks with a tech background. Yeah. However, they don't have a healthcare background. And that poses to be a challenge. As you know, the economics of pharmacy today are ever evolving. A lot of these companies are starting out in very specific niches where they're focused on women's health or mental health, and they're cash only. They're not taking insurance, but they're quickly learning that if you're going to be cash only, you really can only access a certain percent of the market, a small percent of the market. Right. And so they want to start, you know, taking insurance. And, you know, there's not just a quick flip the switch that you can just start taking insurance. There is an entire process that requires you to get in all the PBM networks. And I think one of my biggest challenges in my role today is really helping these new CEOs and, you know, higher level folks at these healthcare companies that are startups really understand our segment, which is very, very, it's so much different than it was even 5 years ago. But understanding the regulatory requirements, the economic challenges, and the PBM requirements, all of it is so, you know, a lot of these companies think they can just open up a pharmacy and ship to all 50 states. There is a lot of regulatory requirements. You know, your pharmacist has to be licensed in those states. So those are some of the challenges. And it's funny, McKesson has just been an amazing company. They're just so excited to really get into this space. So a lot of my role is giving feedback to McKesson about some of the challenges I see every day. So we can determine what types of products and services we need to kind of stand up formally to really service this type of customer that is a very unique customer to the market and to McKesson. Yeah. So, you know, really a lot of my role is consulting. I'm helping them understand the Board of Pharmacy requirements in certain states. If they have some real estate that they found that they want to open up a pharmacy, you know, I'll help them research some of the Board of Pharmacy regulatory requirements, how to even apply for a Board of Pharmacy license, which, by the way, in some states, it's taking about a year, you know, to open up a pharmacy. They don't realize that, you know, from start to finish, that process is really long and painstaking. And if you want to ship into other states, that adds time onto it. And so it's really complex. It's not simple and it costs, you know, you have to have capital to be able to open up these pharmacy locations. So we're really just helping them navigate through that. And I think that was one of the challenges that we just didn't really anticipate how much education these tech companies would need. And so that's been a huge, huge learning curve for all of us to try to like kind of take a step back. And just the consulting piece of my role is definitely a big challenge.
I'm really glad to hear that you're a part of this team, right? Because I know that many of the health tech companies that I've spoken with and that I know, you know, they come from a different background, right? They've got great DevOps. They've done other work in other industries. And because of their experience, you know, they are able to transfer a lot of the playbook lessons into this, right? But you are 100% correct. Like, you're dealing with a completely different beast when it comes to pharmacy, state, local, regional, national regulations, licensure, as well as, you know, being able to understand like the timelines that go in, which are non-traditional. And so, you know, it's fascinating to hear like all of these companies that have, you know, come to you and are working with McKesson to kind of like navigate these waters. You know, have you found instances where some of these companies that had this bright idea and like these optimistic, you know, goals have been educated by you and others at McKesson and have decided that maybe it's not the right move for them? Like, I know that they are, you know, very vested in this, right? But sometimes when reality is presented on a platter, it's a moment of reflection. And I'm curious to know, like, when you have clients like that, like, how do you walk them through the process of like, look, it's daunting. It's a lot more than what you may have expected, but it's absolutely worth it because more people will have access to this and you will be able to provide a service that's beneficial to the country.
Yeah. And we've had a few companies that are no longer doing business. They had to close their doors. You know, sometimes these companies are spending a lot on payroll. You know, it's my operations hat kind of goes immediately on as soon as I walk into some pharmacies and I see, you know, they're filling, you know, 100 prescriptions a day, but they have 6 pharmacists and 10 technicians. I'm like, wow. Woo, okay. Like that could be a problem. Yeah. That's not my role today, but I'm like, hey, in the startup world, I understand you've, you know, got some private equity funding or, you know, venture backed companies that are giving you money right now, but you've got to figure out how to get operationally efficient.
Right.
And so that's kind of one of my first things that I kind of talk about, which is, you know, nothing to do with McKesson. I'm kind of using my learnings from my previous roles, yeah. Where I'm like, hey, you've got to get your payroll under control. It's one of your largest expenses and you've got to figure that out. And I think what we saw last year is we saw probably 3 companies that decided to get out of the pharmacy business because they just could not figure out how to play in that space with the way the economics work today, what they were spending on payroll. And you know, some of that funding has really dried up over the last year. I mean, CEOs used to sneeze and get like $10 million here, $10 million there. And we saw a lot of these digital companies pop up 2-3 years ago. Yep. That funding has been a lot more difficult to come by. And so these companies have to figure out how to get profitable quickly. Payroll is definitely, you know, for my fellow pharmacists on the call are probably cringing, but I get it. At the end of the day, it's a business and the numbers have to make sense. Yes. And these companies have to get profitable quickly. And that's how they're going to get additional funding. I think, you know, the investors right now are looking at companies that are profitable. So they got to figure that out quicker than I would say in the past. And I think that's, we've seen some of those companies that, although they were open to our feedback and education, mm-hmm. I think it was just a little bit maybe too late in the process where they couldn't get any more funding. They weren't profitable yet, dried up. And when the money runs out, they have to close. And so we're seeing, you know, a consolidation of some of these pharmacies right now. But I think who's left that I'm working with, those are some of the stronger players out there that have been able to kind of weather that COVID and the funding. And, you know, I work with companies that are on Series D, Series F, you know, funding rounds right now. And that means they've been able to like make it through. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's exciting to be part of that because they're just so different. But we have seen a few pharmacies close up in the last year because they just could not figure out the economics.
And it's really important to hear that on this show, right? Because, I mean, I was an independent pharmacy owner twice over. And I mean, this was like 20 years ago, but you know, the economics is crucial. You cannot survive. I mean, I ended up liquidating half of my 401k in IRA in order to be able to fund the business. And this is like a small mom and pop. Right. So these are like digital pharmacies that are servicing, you know, sectors and in large swaths of the country. And, you know, in the education that you're doing for and consulting with your clients, you know, you're learning a lot as well. Right. Like, you know, most pharmacists don't really have visibility and exposure to companies that are going through series A, B, C, D and E. So, you know, I'm always curious to know, like when you compare your experience in the retail world to what digital health pharmacies are looking like today, like what else have you learned and that makes you go, wow, this is dramatically different. And so I need to either get better educated on this so that when I offer advice, it makes sense. Or like, yeah, this is some similarities here. Like, I love learning about these little micro discrepancies, but they're very important.
Yeah. You know, I really took for granted all of the resources that we had at Walgreens. They have a long-standing history and an amazing corporate team to really support their store locations and their pharmacists, anywhere from, you know, insurance processing to, you know, clinical information, policies and procedures, all written out. And I never really appreciated how amazing it was to have that corporate team as a resource who was doing all that research in the background, who was creating policies and procedures for us to give vaccines and COVID tests and, you know, all the other, you know, clinical services that we were providing. There's a huge team in the background mm-hmm. who was really creating those policies and procedures to make sure that, you know, patients have a consistent experience across every location. When I work with these startups and they begin to start the process of opening up their own pharmacy, and some of them want to get into specialty. So then I start talking about URAC accreditation, the policies and procedures that you need to have written out. I mean, they are just completely overwhelmed when they see the work that has to go into just writing a policies and procedure. And so, you know, McKesson has a lot of templates and things like that that I can help supply them. I can't write their policies and procedures for them, but I can certainly give them a template
sure.
of like, hey, this is kind of what you need to have. But you need to have a procedure for that, you know? And when I walk into some of their locations and I see inconsistent practices, I'm like, do you guys have a procedure for how to fill a prescription for how to, you know, your shipping processes? Like, do you have a procedure for intake? Do you have a, you know, what's your procedure, you know, if you're changing the manufacturer on a drug? And it's amazing to see that, again, going back to a lot of these are tech companies that maybe don't have that like healthcare experience
right.
and they just didn't understand how regulated our industry is. I go back to my roots at Walgreens and think about like, oh, amazing folks over there that have spent years and years and years putting together these playbooks and these policies and procedures and the training. You know, that the startup world is very different and you really have to play a lot of hats in the startup world. And I think that's been the biggest difference for me is when I'm working with them, you know, I see these startup companies have a lot less resources. They don't have a huge HR team and a huge communications team and a social media team and someone to write policies and procedures and someone to bounce compliance issues off of. And it's scary. But it's definitely been a big part of my role today that I didn't realize I was going to be spending so much time, but I'm using a lot of my learnings from my time in retail pharmacy, which has been invaluable.
I think that that's amazing, right? And I think that that lesson that you're sharing on this show right now is very valid and very helpful for many of the listeners today, right? Because, you know, it's a different world. Right. Like you can come from an established organization, a Fortune 1000 company that's got like all of these resources and experienced protocols and procedures. And to jump into a startup, like, you know, it does require not only a mind shift in a shift in mindset, but there's a lot that's, you know, not available. And you do have to find yourself like putting on an HR hat and a legal hat and, you know, an operations hat and a marketing hat and a PR hat, and you got to wear them all and you got to, you know, juggle them, right? So I, many of my clients that come to me and work for my, you know, work with me and my consulting, like they want to leave an established organization to start something new or to join a new startup. And I always like let them know, like, what experience have you had in this? Like, have you dipped your toe in this water at all? Because I don't want to set them up for success. And you know, you're in a perfect position where you get to bring in that resource and then watch this unfold, which I think is amazing. Joy, when you think about the pharmacy emerging market, you know, in the near future, right? Like, I'm sure not only are you talking to other people within McKesson and within your client base, but you're probably talking to other people that are in similar roles as such as you with other companies. And you're probably seeing like shifts that are taking place either politically or regulatory wise, or even industry wise. And you're starting to see a pattern that's emerging, or maybe something that's coming down the pike where you're like, we need to get ahead of this, right? Like, whether it was us or them, doesn't matter. It's going to hurt or help us unless, you know, and we need to be able to be ready for that. Like, when, for the listeners of the show, like, what do you see in the next maybe 18, 24 months that you are like, this is a pressing matter, and I want to talk about this because it's going to hurt or help, you know, the entire industry, so we should be ready?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about like DIR fees right now and how pharmacies are going to tackle that.
And what is a DIR for the listening audience today?
So DIR fees, I think, is a big challenge that pharmacies are really going to have to get in front of. For those of you that aren't familiar with DIR fees, it stands for direct and indirect remuneration fees, also called like price concessions sometimes. But it's at the point of sale, and it's really where PBMs can charge these fees outside of their administration fees. Oftentimes, you don't know what the fees are going to be at the end of the month. And so we really got to do more research about it. I think I'm learning a lot about it myself because I'm working with pharmacies that are showing me statements that they're getting billed DIR fees 6 months after a claim.
Whoa.
And how do you as a pharmacy, how do you even budget for something like that when you don't know what the fee is going to be, you don't know when it's going to be charged? I think it's a really difficult position. So we've got a lot of legislation right now that we're kind of talking about and supporting about just how to better regulate these DIR fees. And so, you know, come 2024, they're going to be built into the point of sale rates. So I think they'll be a little bit more transparent. So it doesn't mean they're going away.
Right.
It just means it's going to provide more transparency. And so we've got to be able to better plan for it. And so, you know, these DIR fees can, you know, include discounts, chargeback, rebates. It's very difficult. So my biggest piece of advice is to educate yourself. You know, I think at McKesson, we have our Health Mart pharmacies. Those are all independent pharmacies. And we have Health Mart Atlas, which is our PSAO, a pharmacy services organization to provide reimbursement services. And, you know, we're doing a lot of education right now because basically DIR fees could be lower if you have good performance. So basically, as a pharmacy, better outcomes, better performance could mean lower DIR fees. But right now we're trying to understand how performance is measured. Okay. And so my biggest piece of advice there is pharmacies, independent owners really need to educate themselves right now on what's coming in 2024, because there is going to be more transparency. But those DIR fees will be measured on, you know, how your pharmacy is improving patient outcomes. And so that's definitely a big concern that I have for pharmacies moving forward, is if you're not focused on patient outcomes, there's lots of tools out there to, you know, really look at your equip data and things like that to make sure that your patients are remaining compliant and adherent. I think that's super important right now.
I think that this is very, very valuable. It's probably the best answer I've heard from my past guests, and not to say anything bad about them, right? But it's so pertinent that listeners of the this podcast today understand that, you know, the actual investment in terms of education, monitoring, compliance, and training that they can provide to their patients for outcomes and clinical outcomes is going to be directly impacting the compensation that they will get or the remuneration. Very, very valid. And hopefully there will be more educational sessions at conferences and, you know, through organizations as well, that I encourage people to really talk to others and get on this page quickly. Because 2024 is what, like, wow, 4 months away, 3.5 months away. That's so fast.
That's a great point. Every conference I've been to in the last year has had multiple sessions about DIR fees. And I think it's really important that we are all educating ourselves on what they are, how it's changing in 2024, and how you can get ready for it. So that's definitely my biggest piece of advice right now that I see consistently every single pharmacy I work with is talking about it.
Joy, we've talked a lot about, you know, the emerging pharmacy channels and a lot of the headwinds that are coming. And I'd like to kind of shift our conversation a little bit now away from what you see as a representative of McKesson and talk a little bit more about you. I mean, as you pointed out early in this conversation, you've had an amazing career. Today, you are the vice president of emerging pharmacy channels at McKesson. Prior to this, you were the director of pharmacy and retail operations at Walgreens. You've been a regional director of local specialty at Walgreens, and you've served as a district pharmacy supervisor, not to mention the fact that you are also the president of the Alumni Senate at Midwestern University, which is near and dear to both of our hearts. And you do quite a bit of work in the leadership space. So, you know, when I think of individuals that are looking for mentors, you know, that fit their criteria, like, you are usually one of the first people that come to my mind. But, you know, as part of this podcast, like, it's always important for me to be able to have leaders like yourself talk about some of the challenges or even just like the factors that went into your decision making process for you to accept the role that you're in today. You know, you've talked very positively about your time at Walgreens and many of the things that you saw, and something, you know, like this opportunity presented itself. Maybe you sought it, maybe it was brought to you. I'd love to hear a little bit about how this opportunity came to be for you and how it was brought into your universe. And what were some of the factors that maybe went into your decision-making process for you to accept and leave behind a world that you were very satisfied with?
Totally. Great question. I think leaving Walgreens was one of the most difficult decisions of my life. I honestly thought I would never leave. I was prepared to stay there for a very long time. I think when I started to see, you know, these digital pharmacies started popping up, I just was reading about it on LinkedIn and I was following a lot of these companies. I just took an interest in, wow, like, they can move quicker and they're very agile and they can do a lot of things that, you know, we can't do. And I'm interested to see how this plays out. And I saw some of them growing quickly. And, you know, at the end of the day, I just got to a point where I started to kind of just, you know, kind of was getting really passionate about it. And, you know, Walgreens is very into the digital world as well. Like, their app has come a long way, where you can order prescriptions on their app, and I still fill my prescriptions there. But I would say the one thing that was the big differentiator for me that really got me thinking is I've had some amazing sponsors and mentors throughout my career to get me where I am today. But one of my most significant sponsors left Walgreens and came to McKesson. And, you know, when she reached out to me to tell me a little bit about this role, I was like, whoa, this is so cool. Like, I could still, you know, work as a pharmacist. I mean, I'm not filling prescriptions anymore, nor would you want me to, but, I, you know, I can still, you know, work and have a great career, but I'm working with these digital emerging players that I'm so excited about and I've been very passionate about for the last couple of years and been kind of cheering for them in the background. Not that I think, you know, I think we're going to land in a space where there's digitals and there's absolutely always going to be retail pharmacies. And so I think we can figure out how to play together in this space because I think a lot of their services complement each other, but I just couldn't turn down the opportunity. One, because of who my boss was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sponsor who I had worked for in the past, who had been, you know, really mentoring me and challenging me and had provided other opportunities to me in the past. And so for me, taking on a new role, one of my first questions is, who's my boss going to be?
Yes.
I've had some bad bosses in the past. I've had some amazing bosses. But who you report to and the relationship that you have with them and the way they treat others, to me, is more important than anything. So number one, that was the main reason that I moved over. Second, I wasn't ready to go to a startup, you know, and I'm still not ready to go to a startup. I've always worked for large companies. And so the fact that it was going from a Walgreens large company to a McKesson, you know, Fortune 10 company, I was like, okay, I'm comfortable with that. I need that stability. I need that structure. Yeah. And so it kind of met all my needs. And I knew the person that I had worked with in the past who had come to this team to really start this team was coming, you know, she was already here. So I knew I'd be reporting to her. So those were like the two biggest things. I had a boss that was amazing. And I was going to a really strong company that they're not just going to go out of business in a month, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that sort of safety and knowledge of like what to expect, right? There's no ambiguity, not to a large extent. And I think that's really important. And, you know, let's kind of delve a little bit deeper into this, right? Because I think it's important that, you know, being the leader that you are today, you've already mentioned that because of the sponsor that you had that was early on in your career and how she was able to sort of like not only guide you, but also to push you. I heard that in the conversation, right? Like, let's talk a little bit about that. And if you feel comfortable, I'd love for you to share the name of this person and talk to us a little bit about how she was able to see the potential in you and kind of bring you out of that shell that we were all at some point. We're like, I can't do this. Yes, you can.
Yeah, no, I mean, everything you're saying is exactly, you know, what she did for me. And, you know, hopefully she's listening. Her name is Nicole Leiter. She has been a huge part of my career journey, and we've become friends for years. And she is a pharmacist by training as well. You know, she definitely saw that potential very early on and really, you know, I'm the kind of person that's very open to feedback, but she's also, you know, open to giving feedback. So giving and receiving feedback is such a critical part of leadership. It's just, I can't stress the importance of being open to feedback and giving feedback. And so she, you know, is very upfront with me. You know, and if she felt like when I was in a conversation, if I could have done better, she would tell me and we would, you know, talk about ways to very early on in my career, you know, just presentations and things like that. But I think she really championed me getting to other roles in the company as she was moving up through other roles in the company. You know, she would think, and she does this with other people too, is like, oh, she hears about a role that's open and she's like, oh my gosh, those skills that would be fantastic in that role are really good for this person, are really good for that person. And so she came to me. One of the most like difficult choices I ever made was kind of leaving that like field leadership role where I was kind of comfortable going to stores every day and taking on a regional director role. So my territory goes from, you know, a pocket of Phoenix to everything west of the Mississippi, including Alaska and Hawaii, yeah, where I'm traveling on a plane every week. That was super scary. And I'll never forget the phone call when, you know, she was like, you know, I think you'd be great for this position. Tell me about it. And, you know, when I heard it had a lot of travel associated with it, that was super scary. I'm like, let me talk to my family and figure out if this can work for us. And, you know, we weren't really sure if it could work for us, but we were like, this is an amazing opportunity. And we just kind of took it. And so I was reporting to her, and that role led me into another role where they wanted me to stand up an infusion team as the senior director of advanced therapies for Alliance Rx Walgreens Prime, which was the joint venture between Walgreens and Prime Therapeutics. They came to me and they're like, we're looking for someone to stand this up. And I'm thinking, I don't know anything about an infusion. Like, you want me? They're like, yeah, like the skills you have, you know, the communication, you know, the drive, the motivation, you know, we'll teach you the infusion piece, mm-hmm. but we got to just pull it all together. Well, it was in Orlando. I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. I got to fly to Orlando every week. Or do you need me to move to Orlando? And they're like, well, you can just travel for now. And, you know, it was hard, but again, it's, there's definitely opportunities I've had to say no to. But I would say for the most part, mm-hmm. I had to get really uncomfortable to take on these roles. And I'm so glad I did. They were very difficult, you know, a lot of work-life balance happening in all of these roles that I've taken. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have, you know, Nicole sponsoring me throughout this journey, giving me constant feedback of how I could, you know, do things differently, positive reinforcement, and just all kinds of amazing advice she's given me over the years, but also taking that leap and being uncomfortable and just kind of diving in. All of them have paid off so well for me. But it's about really, you got to kind of get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah. And, you know, it's great to hear you talk about this because, you know, so many people stop themselves from embracing an opportunity because they feel that they don't have the knowledge. Right. And you're painting this picture very clearly for myself and for many of my listeners, right? It's not knowledge of the specific thing that you're going to jump into. It's, do you have the skills and the ability to learn and then modify and then leverage, right? And that's, I think, what most leaders look for. But to know that you had a champion like Nicole that understood like your what you were bringing to the table and then speak on your behalf. You know, one of the things that I always tell my clients all the time is like, you know, you can cold apply all day long. You can spend 40,000 hours or you know, 80 hours a week on LinkedIn and Indeed and Glassdoor looking for jobs. But if you don't have a relationship with somebody in that company, it's going to be a heck of a lot harder because who's going to vouch for you? Like behind closed doors, and you know, you've had a great relationship with Nicole because of the time that you were able to spend with her. But it's not necessary to have years and years of that type of relationship. You can have, you know, a couple of meetings and be like, you know, this is something I see in this person, and I'd like to learn more about that. And I'm really glad that you brought that. I'm glad that you had Nicole in your life as well, because, you know, people need sponsors. People need mentors. And if you don't have one, you know, you should have five. Like, honestly, you should really have a cadre of individuals that you can turn to regularly. So Joy, I appreciate you sharing that. And Nicole, thank you for the work that you've done to help my friend Joy move to where she is and possibly even on to bigger and better things as well. Joy, when you think about the next 12 or 18 months, you know, I always know that strong leaders never rest on their laurels. You've not come to a point where you're like, okay, this is it. This is as good as it gets. I'm happy. You know, there's always something inside you that pushes you to try and either make something better or explore something new. So I'm always curious, like, you know, in your perspectives of what you want to see for yourself in the next 12, 18, 24 months, like, what have you set as your next, you know, big milestone? Like, what do you want to do, whether it's at McKesson, maybe it's something personally, educationally, like, what's the next big thing for Joy Reese?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think right now I am, you know, my children are 6 and 12 years old, so they're young. I am definitely trying to be more present than ever. So I think making sure I get through, you know, my daughter just started first grade, Aiden just started seventh grade. Yeah. And so they're young and very active. And I think there was a point in time in my career where I wasn't probably putting their extracurricular activities and their, you know, time in front of mine. And I think I've definitely been doing a better job of making them and making their activities. Like, I don't want to miss any games. I don't want to miss even any practices at this point. And so, you know, making sure that they're healthy and happy is my priority right now. And I think, you know, personally, that's my biggest thing right now is putting the phone down, you know, making sure I'm logging off at an appropriate time and sitting down and playing Uno. Ava's going through this Uno phase where she wants to play cards. And so I'm, you know, trying to be more present. so that they see that, you know, they're, you know, as soon as they see my AirPods in, they're like, "Mommy, are you on a conference call?" Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "No, I'm just listening to a podcast," because they immediately just associate me with working. Like I'm always working, yeah. But I'm like, "No, I'm just listening to music," or I'm, you know, just, you know, listening to a podcast. And a lot of TED Talks I've been listening to lately, and books that I've been just kind of reading. But, you know, one thing that I've not done that I keep thinking about is getting my MBA. I think it's never too late to start something like that. Definitely wouldn't finish in the next 12 to 18 months, but it's, you know, it's always something I've had in my mind. You know, my background is clinical, and, you know, I've had a lot of business experience, mm-hmm. but I know there's a lot that I still don't know that I think an MBA could help me with. I don't know. So it's something I kind of go back and forth on every several months. So it's definitely something that I continue to think about. Yeah. But it's right now getting through just this childhood with my children is absolutely my number one priority, and making sure they're healthy and happy and active.
So, Joe, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm asking this as a friend and as a personal, as an individual, not as a professional, because I know when I was in your shoes, I failed at that pretty miserably. Like, I just, you know, I saw my kids when I came home, and then I went right back into work, went at home, or then I went to the pharmacy. I mean, what has that been like? Like, how do you retrain yourself to do that consistently and successfully?
Yeah, it's been hard. I think one of the things that's been most effective for me is blocking time in my calendar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just in general, balancing work and life. I did not do a good job of that in the past, but basically my calendar tells me where to go, what to do. Who, yep. I put everything in my calendar, like literally
that's me.
Every kid's practices. I have an alarm set for like when I'm supposed to leave to like drive to go pick them up from school. You know, I don't schedule conference calls when I'm picking them up and dropping them off from school, unless it's absolutely necessary. But in general, like that time that we're driving, even I don't want to be on a conference call. And in the past, I'm on a conference call as we're driving to school. And I'm like, I could have just scheduled this, you know, 20 minutes later. Yep. And so I think calendar management, I've done a lot of work on just testing different things, blocking my calendar at certain times when, like right when they get home. I mean, I have that flexibility since I work from home, has been really helpful, so that when they get home from school, I can make them a quick snack, get them started on their homework. And I don't have any calls scheduled during that 30-minute block from when I picked them up to, you know, a little bit after they got home. That allows me to just spend some of that critical time and still get my work done. Yeah. Because I do jump on after they get home from school at 3 o'clock. I still have conference calls and I still have work to do.
Right.
But I blocked off that time, and I've been really, just really focused on that. And then, you know, 5:30, I am off the computer and I am making dinner, getting ready to take Aiden to football practice. And literally that football practice is in my calendar in case some rogue conference call.
Right.
Someone's looking at my calendar.
Right. Time blocked.
I'm not available.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, you know, making sure that I have really awesome communication with my boss, and just if she knows if there's something going on in my life or something going on, I'm very upfront about that. So there's no surprises. And I think that's just made it a lot easier. It was not easy though, because in some of my past roles, I would be up till midnight working and yep. just answering emails. And I got sucked into that life, and it just became normal to me. And I realized at one point that is not okay. And it just didn't work. And so I've really had to retrain myself. It's not been easy, but I am in such a better place there.
And I totally get what you're saying, because, you know, I mean, I would try the same and then I would fail. I would be like, after 2 weeks, like, well, this is more important today, right? And then once I fell off the slope, you know, it just consistently handled. So kudos to you. And thank you for sharing that, right? Because I know a lot of the listeners today are very much like us. Like, they just know that like work is very important, and there are times that you need to carve out time for family, but, you know, little things can creep in. I want to go back for a moment because earlier in our conversation, you know, I had mentioned about some of the initiatives that McKesson was championing, right? We talked about sustainability. We talk about, a variety of different things, including the trying to overcome the opioid crisis. As a pharmacist to another pharmacist, I'm sure that there are lots of people that may have their opinions, but, OTC Narcan has really come front and center now in a lot of, states and a lot of cities, and some good, some bad. And if you feel comfortable, I just wanted to kind of ask what your opinions were on that in terms of how this type of legislation is going to impact pharmacies, communities, and society as a whole. Like, what are your thoughts in terms of like this push to see Narcan going OTC in more major cities and states?
Yeah, this is such an important topic that is just near and dear to my heart. Sadly, I had a family member who died of an opioid overdose. And that's been really hard on our family. And I think at the end of the day, there are resources out there, and having Narcan available OTC is going to be critical in the future. We are in the middle of a huge overdose crisis, and the Narcan approval in OTC status, I wish it could happen quickly, but that's not how these work, but I know it's coming, and I think it's going to be so critical. At the end of the day, If you need Narcan in any state right now, you could go into the pharmacy, talk to the pharmacist. You know, it's behind the counter. It's not in a full OTC status yet, but we've got two products that have been approved. But this is a very lengthy process. These manufacturers have to basically rebrand, resubmit applications to change their packaging. Obviously, OTC packaging has much different requirements than prescription packaging. So, you know, these manufacturers are all scrambling right now, and the FDA is really, really pushing them to prioritize this so that we can get these products on the shelf so that you can just walk into any retail pharmacy and there's, over-the-counter naloxone available. And so I think, for those of you that are listening and haven't really dealt with an overdose, it's getting to the point for me that it's happening so much around us that we should have it in like our first aid kits. I hope that's where we get to the point that you can go buy a first aid kit and there's going to be Narcan in it. You just don't ever know. And it's, for those of you that have never used it, it's a nasal spray.
Right.
And you literally, if someone's overdosing or you see signs of an overdose and you may not even know it's an overdose, you're basically, spraying in the nostril. And that's it. And honestly, if you're not sure if it's an overdose, you could still give it. It wouldn't cause harm. But at the end of the day, we need to have Narcan accessible to everyone, everywhere, any time of the day. And frankly, it should just be in your medicine cabinet. It should be in our first aid kits. We should have some in our cars. I know a lot of people that have allergic anaphylactic reactions. Mm-hmm. They always have an EpiPen with them. We've got to get to this point with Narcan that everybody has it. Just like you have a Band-Aid in your purse, you've got Narcan. You could save someone's life. And it's so important. I am such a huge proponent of having this tool available. This is going to really help our major public health problem that we're having. I've even done talks at McKesson, to educate internal McKesson folks what this means. And so it's just really important that everyone understands it's a very easy to use product. It's going to be widely available, hopefully here soon. We're hoping early 2024, I think it got FDA approved in March. But like I said, there's a lot of work that goes into having these manufacturers repackage, rebrand, resubmit applications for OTC status. And so it looks like we're going to have two products ready to go here pretty soon. And I think it's just, getting out there, talking about it. Some folks don't like to talk about the issue, but at the end of the day, we've all got to educate ourselves on this issue, and having Narcan widely available is going to help. It's going to make things a lot easier, and we're going to be able to save some lives.
I appreciate you bringing that to the forefront and really helping me understand a little bit about, you know, the value of, again, I have to tell you, I'm sorry about the loss in your family and the experience you had with that. But I know that through that experience, like, you've educated yourself and now you are a huge proponent for that. So thank you. Thank you for bringing that to the show, Joy. That means a lot. And that's a very sensitive topic and very vulnerable of you. And I really want you to know how much I appreciate that. Joy, and as a leader, you know, you are surrounded by some great people within your organization at McKesson and many of your clients that you work with, but you also end up having encounters with other people, whether it's at conferences or you know, teaching at Midwestern or anywhere that you may be, where you suddenly realize that the person in front of you has some qualities and you are thinking, wow, she or he is amazing. We need to hire her within McKesson. If it's not on my team, my friend's team, somewhere in this organization, she has these things, that these qualities that we really want. And I always ask my leaders, like, you know, how do you determine what those leaders are? Like, what are those qualities that you look for in people to think, this person would be an asset to our organization, and at the very least, we need to have a formal conversation with her about, or him, about what we can do within this organization if they join us?
Yeah, great question. And I mean, there's like three or four big ones that are a huge focus for me. One is good communication. Mm. I mean, I think that goes without saying, anyone that can really constructively communicate, asking good questions, that all falls under the communication bucket for me, speaks clearly, and really asking a lot of questions. Those are so important. But number two is really active listening. When I meet someone who is truly listening, making good eye contact, and really listening to the problem, the statement, that's super important. There's a lot of people always trying to multitask on their computer, on their phone, on their tablet. But when I meet people that are like good communicators and good active listeners, mm-hmm. that's just huge. I think one of the things that's really important to me in addition is someone who smiles. I'm like, you know, I'm a people person. So I love to talk to people. And when I see someone who smiles, it really just brightens your day. Even when you're like walking down the street and someone like smiles at you, you're like, oh, wow. Like, thanks for that. Like,
yeah.
I think smiling is so like underutilized, and I'm a big, when I see someone smile, I immediately like want to go over and talk to you and we can just start conversations. So, you know, good communication, active listening, the smile, and then through those conversations and through those interactions, really being open to change. I've worked with a lot of people in the past who were just dead set in their ways. Mm. And those, where we're at today, healthcare is so dynamic. Pharmacy is changing so much. If you're going to be set in a certain way, and that's the way you've always done it, and that's the way you work, I can't work with people like that. Sure. I can't work with bosses like that. And I wouldn't hire people like that. And so I think it's really important that the trait of being like open to change, which a lot of times change, you've got to receive feedback. I think it's really important for folks to be open to change and open to others' feedback. Mm-hmm. Those are probably like, I'd say the four biggest characteristics that I look for when I'm hiring, recruiting, and really just looking for talent.
I think that's again, phenomenal, because you know, so many of the times that we speak with people, like the smile part really gets me. I got to be honest with you, Joy. The smile part gets me, because when you can work with an executive, an individual contributor, and anything in between, and they are willing to, you know, like be, you know, positive and friendly from the start, you know that you have a greater chance of success. Right. And I've worked with plenty of executives, you know, both as an employee and as a consultant, where I'm like, this is not going to work out well, because they don't want to be able to be vulnerable, and they don't want to be open, and they don't want to work in the spirit of cooperation. So, you know, of all the things that you said, I agree with all of them. Right. But I'm going to tell you, the smile is the tell for me. That's how it works.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you said that.
I agree. We can teach you anything, but if you can, you know, if you have these few components here, we can teach you anything. And so I totally agree. It goes the same with, same thing with football. My son, you know, his coaches always tell me he is such a great athlete, but what we love about Bess is he's coachable. He listens to our feedback. He never is disrespectful back to us. He wants to be better and he's constantly working hard to be better. He's coachable. And that's huge. That's huge.
Love it. Joy, I know we're running close to time, but you know, I've enjoyed this conversation immensely. And I always want to give my guests the opportunity to bring to the forefront anything that maybe we haven't talked about yet, but you feel is really critical for the listeners of this episode today to walk away from thinking, you know, that is good food for thought. I really need to pay more attention to this. So if there's things that we haven't covered on the show yet, what would be that one piece of advice or that one topic of reflection that you'd want the listeners today to gather some effort or make some effort in learning more about and making, kind of imbibing best practices to help them either advance their career or just to become more aware of what's happening in the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of hit on a little bit, but I guess my biggest thing is don't stop learning, and don't pigeonhole yourself into a certain part of your industry that you can't get out of. And if you do, make sure to continue to educate yourself outside of the realm. And you know, my example there is, you know, I'm a pharmacist by training. Obviously, I keep up my pharmacist license. I do my CEs. And so I'm trying to stay connected to the new upcoming medications. And, you know, I work for a pharmaceutical wholesaler right now, not an actual, you know, I don't dispense prescriptions myself, but I want to stay relevant and I want to stay, you know, marketable in case something ever did happen with my job. And so making sure that I understand what's going outside of my world is so important. Attending conferences is a really important way to do that. Joining employee resource groups at your company is another really important way to do that. And, you know, I just think it's really important to just get out of your box that you're in every day, do a great job at your role, but then also make sure that you understand what's going on outside of your department, your company, and, you know, what's going on in the industry, because it's changing so much.
Yeah.
I think we kind of touched on it, but just to really call that out, just continue to educate yourself and stay relevant.
Honestly, Joy, I wish we had another 45 minutes, right? Because you just touched on something that's really near and dear to my heart, and that's joining an ERG or an ARG, associate or employee resource group. You know, it's probably such an undervalued tool. And when you think about it, like, there are so many, my God, we could just spend hours on this. I'm gonna have to put a pause on that, because I think that if I can add one piece of advice, don't discount them. Like, get involved. It's great exposure. Mm-hmm. It's great education. And to be honest with you, it helps with the network. Joy, it's been an absolute thrill having you on the show today. I'm so grateful that you took the time to be here and share some of your learnings, your insights, and really to motivate my listeners today. As always, I do look forward to seeing you again in the near future. And I'm wishing you nothing but success as you continue to take healthcare to a higher level.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Hire podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.